one small thing?
Yeah.
When you bring me out, can you introduce me as Joker?
Generation. I'm your host, Rob Logan, joined for this episode by Booster Greg.
Hey-o. Wait, no, sorry, I did that wrong. Hey now.
Hey now, there you go. Hey
That's
now.
What it is.
Hey-o.
Hey-o.
I need to change mine, apparently. I need to switch to the hey-o. If you've heard Booster's voice before, I'm sure you have. That means either you're a listener to Adapt This, which is another show on the Geek Generation Network, or the Bad Coyote Funky podcast, or his Twitch channel at twitch.tv/BoosterGreg. Mm-hmm. Greg is here to join me to hop into the spoiler room, which we're going to do in just a moment, to talk about Joker and all the controversies behind it. We're gonna analyze it, break it down, and we're going to do that in just a moment. So this is your warning. Once we go into the spoiler room, anything that we say is fair game. So if you have not seen Joker yet, I highly recommend you go out to the movie theaters and see it first and then come back. And this will be waiting for you when you get here. If you have seen it, we will see you in the spoiler room right now.
Access granted. Welcome.
Okay, so Joker, do you want to give your initial thoughts on it?
Initial thoughts on the, well, I'm going to give my initial thoughts on the spoiler room. It's a lot more luxurious than I thought it would be.
We downplay it a little bit.
You do a lot of it, I'll say. It's a full leather couch right here with full reclining seats automatic.
Share that.
Sorry. Joker. I guess my final thoughts. Is that what you asked, or initial thoughts?
Initial thoughts. Yeah. What do you kind of like overall? Like, did you love it? Did you hate it?
I liked it. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. I liked it. I had a lot of problems with it going into it before, like especially with the first trailer that came out. I was like, I don't know if I'm going to like this. The second trailer, I was pretty much down for after I watched that.
Same.
For me, it all boils down to, in my mind, that this is an Elseworld still.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes me like it. It has its faults, but I will say it's definitely one of the better of the DC movies to come out lately.
Mm-hmm.
And that I'm like... I don't know, it's weird because like I want more Shazam, but the fact that this was gritty, I also liked, and I didn't like that about like the Snyder stuff. So like,
yeah,
it's weird. I'm very conflicted on the direction it took, but I liked it. It was good.
The reason I support its creation is because, kind of like you said, I like this direction for DC, and I like doing the standalone, and I like the fact that this is a gritty street level movie because it gives me hope that we'll see a Batman one like that, but not as detached from the source material as this one was.
I think that bothers me less and less because for in my mind, it's an Elseworlds tale.
Mm-hmm.
And because for me, the movie isn't, and this is like grasping at straws, I think, but for me, the movie isn't called The Joker. It's just Joker.
Oh, we'll talk about that. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like you, I thought it was fine.
Yeah.
I left the theater kind of disappointed.
Okay.
As I had said on the podcast many times going in, I didn't think this movie was necessary and actually thought it was detrimental to the character of the Joker.
Really?
Because anytime you ascribe an origin to a character who's better off without one, you're raising some issues. It's the reason I didn't see Solo and probably won't ever. And I think Joker works better when he doesn't have an origin. That being said, I do like the story of the Killing Joke. And the reason that it works is because he throws some ambivalence into it as like, this may or may not be my origin story.
Yeah.
But the thing about the Killing Joke that makes it worthwhile is that there's actually a plot line happening while he's delving into his origin. It's not just an origin story. There's actually something else going on.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And I think like one of my like gut reactions coming out of this movie too was like, oh, this would be a much better Red Hood movie than it is Joker movie. But Red Hood doesn't put butts in seats. Not like, I'm not talking Jason Todd, I'm talking Killing Joke, mm-hmm. Joker. Like, that was, you know, if you're thinking that's his origin, or well, one of the many origins that he could possibly have, that it would, like Joker, the movie of Joaquin Phoenix, fits a lot better into the Red Hood role than it does the actual Joker role, because there are many Red Hoods, and Joker historically has not been a legacy character.
Mm-hmm.
But with that being said, I kind of like to think that this iteration is a legacy character.
I was annoyed with the fact when I wasn't even watching Gotham, but when they said that that was a legacy idea, I was like, nope, don't like it. And I don't like it here either.
For Joker, it's a little different for me. Like, I'm not, or maybe it's just like growing up, I'm not as attached to a hero has to be this one person and that's it. I think Superman is the exception for me. Mm-hmm. But back when Batman, Bruce Wayne was like flying through time, trying to crawl his way back, and Dick Grayson took over, I was oddly okay with that.
Mm.
And mainly because he wasn't trying to be Bruce Wayne Batman. He was trying to be his own Batman. Mm-hmm. And I've always admired characters like Green Lantern, Flash, who are just legacy characters in and of their own right. And I never considered Joker to be a legacy character, even though you have things in like Batman Beyond where, like, you know, you have a whole gang that's inspired by him. Sure. But it, for me, it works. Like, if Arthur is the first Joker, or just iteration, then it just builds from there.
Mm-hmm.
Joaquin Phoenix's Joker made me not hate as much Jared Leto's Joker. Not because of the performance or anything like that, but because in my mind, I know the two movies are not connected. Mm-hmm. But if they were, that means that Jared Leto's Joker is not the Joker either, and that's fine by me.
Yeah. I guess
your face is like, I don't know. He was terrible. Don't get me wrong. He was not a great Joker.
The problem with that idea is, mm-hmm. and I know you can do this with characters. You can say this character can be interpreted many ways. Batman is one of the best examples of that, where there's like funny Batman. There's mm-hmm. super serious Batman. There's like kiddie mm-hmm. Batman, and mm-hmm. there's all different kinds. And yeah, you can kind of do the same things with the Joker. But I think if you get too far away, and we've talked about this before on Adapt This, when we talked about like what makes Batman Batman and what do you need to include, if you lose too much, it's not Joker anymore. And I think this movie lost too much.
I think every live action iteration of the Joker is missing fundamentally the point of the Joker. They all have like aspects of the Joker.
Mm-hmm.
I'm including Joaquin Phoenix into this as well. Like, for me, You're going to have the animated version, and that's like the top that you can get. You cannot get a better adaptation of the Joker than Mark Hamill's Joker.
Agreed.
That being said, you have things like Jack Nicholson, who has all the toys, but he's just Jack Nicholson in face paint, essentially, for me. Heath Ledger had the chaotic anarchy take to him, but he didn't really have the toys, and he didn't really have this. Like, he kind of had the sense of humor, but not really.
Mm-hmm.
Jared Leto, I'm going to struggle to think of this one. I guess he had
white skin and green hair.
Yeah. Like, he wasn't wearing face paint.
Yeah.
So there's that. And also, they did treat Harley's origin with a lot of care.
Mm-hmm.
And he was kind of charming in that regard to her. And Joaquin Phoenix as the Joker definitely had like the, if you want to think the Killing Joke is the actual origin of the Joker, very similar ties to that.
Mm-hmm.
Failed stand-up comedian, warped sense of reality. The fact that he is, even though we don't really see it because we're stuck to his point of view, he is very charismatic. Like, you don't get an entire following of people behind you just by accident like that. And that's the big thing is with this movie, is they kind of frame it as, oh, he just like killed a couple rich kids and this whole like class war started because of that. But there's also, we're looking at the whole movie through his point of view.
Yeah, he ascribes that to being the reason that it's happening.
A lot of the things that I have issue with this movie, I can write off in headcanon as it being just his point of view. And that's not what actually happened.
Mm-hmm. The whole unreliable narrator idea.
Exactly, exactly. Especially with Thomas Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had a big problem with that when I first watched it.
I did too. Okay, so let's break this down then. I broke my thoughts down into what kind of worked for me and what kind of didn't work for me.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're getting the things that I liked, obviously Joaquin Phoenix's performance regardless of whether you're looking at it as him playing Joker or playing a character that's just in this particular story, mm-hmm. is irrelevant when it comes down to the fact that he gave a fantastic performance regardless.
110%. He was amazing.
Yeah.
Like, he was lost in there. Like, if you think about Joaquin Phoenix in, like, Gladiator or Signs and then Joker, mm-hmm. he's completely different.
Yeah.
Or even her. It's amazing.
Yeah, he is a true actor. Yeah. And I like the fact, too, that they said, like, stuff coming out in interviews and everything, Todd Phillips has said, he didn't get lost in this role. Like, he's an actor. Like, we were cracking up on set all the time. This is a dark, messed up, twisted movie, but we had a blast.
Yeah.
And that's what I feel like a real place should be. Like, I get the idea of method acting, mm-hmm. but that almost feels like it's a cheat if you have to method act.
Yeah.
Like, if you can't turn it on and off, then where's your skill if you're just becoming all the time?
Well, I think that's the skill in and of itself, which I think would be better for espionage than acting, but that's just me. But, like, yeah, like, I see the different train of thoughts with acting, and, like, I haven't done a lot of it, but I did, like, a lot in high school and a little bit in college, and mm-hmm. I was definitely, like, a switch on-off. But there were people who just, like, I had friends that just, like, lost themselves in a role, and I was like, all right, I'll see you in a month or two, I guess.
Yeah.
But I think they're both different skills, and, like, I admire both of them, and I think it's, I want to say this having not been a method actor, but I feel like it's easier to get lost in a role and just be someone else for a while.
Probably.
Than just to turn it off and on, but maybe that's not the case, I don't know. But yeah, like, his Joaquin Phoenix performance was spectacular. Like, you can say, I think a lot of the reviews that I read were like, said what you said, this movie is fine, but man, that performance.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, he's going for an Oscar on that. He's reaching for it.
Absolutely.
And he should at least get the nod, I think.
I agree. The music, I thought, was very, very strong. It did, however, here and there pull me out. There were times where it was a little obtrusive. Mm-hmm. And it did kind of pull me out here and there. But for the most part, it worked very well with it.
Like when he was dancing on the stairs, and all of a sudden it just, like, cut the song in the middle of the dance move when the cop showed up. And I was like, that was abrupt. I don't know how I feel about that. Yeah, the music, I don't know, didn't do much for me, to be honest. Like, for me, it's always if I remember the soundtrack after the fact.
See, sometimes for me, it's if I don't.
Really?
If I feel like it added a mood, but I didn't notice it.
Yeah.
It just, like, played along with everything so well.
Yeah.
That it added what it was supposed to do, but it stayed in the background and didn't make me notice that there was music playing.
See, I like when it's a part of the story, and I can tell it's a part of the story. Mm-hmm. So my favorite soundtrack is The Social Network, because it was just so, like, integrated into the tone of the movie. And they, you know, it's a movie about technology, so they did use a lot of, like, synth stuff, and that just works. And it's also, like, happens to be Trent Reznor's bread and butter.
Right, right.
But, like, that's what I like. Feeling it, feeling the hits with the movie and the soundtrack and everything. And this one, just, I don't remember it. Then that's also, like, there's another end of that coin too. Like, if I remember it and it was, like, just completely jarring and not working, I don't like that.
Well, a weird thing that I read about the score too is the fact that a lot of it was done before the movie was shot. They were actually listening. Mm. The composer wrote the score based on the script, not on the footage.
Interesting.
Which is very different.
Sure.
So they were actually listening to music that was going to be in the movie on set while they were filming the movie.
That's an interesting kind of way to do it.
Right.
Because I wonder if that shaped Todd Phillips' vision.
It did shape some stuff. There's a particular scene that they improvised on set and didn't use the scripted portion as a result. And that's the... after he shoots the guys and goes in that bathroom and does the dance.
Oh, yeah.
That was
completely
improv by Joaquin. The script had something completely different. And I think that's also why that scene doesn't really work for me because it wasn't in service to anything. It was just like a random moment.
Yeah, I was watching that. I was like, why is he dancing now? Is this supposed to be some sort of metamorphosis? I don't know. Like,
that's what I was wondering. But then it didn't, like, go anywhere. It just kind of stopped after. Like, it felt like a weird crowbarred in thing that didn't have a resolution. It was just like, he's dancing and now we're on to the next scene.
Yeah. I think I would have much rather preferred, while it had been, would have been stereotypical to do, just have him looking in the mirror and laughing maniacally.
You're not far off of what was supposed to happen.
Okay.
He was supposed to go in, kind of freak out a little bit about the fact that he just killed a bunch of people, like, look at his gun, and then see his face, like, with the makeup kind of smeared and sweating. And then he like wipes it off and throws the gun away. So like, but he keeps looking at himself and like taking these beats. Mm-hmm. So he's slowly accepting that identity, even though part of him is still Arthur and be like, oh no, what did I do?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like that weird middle ground, which I think would have worked better for me.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Instead of that dance where it's like, I don't know what he's like, I know. Like visually, it looked really good. Like this whole movie visually looked amazing.
Yeah.
And that's just like Todd Phillips' MO. Like everything he does just looks gorgeous. But like, yeah, he was dancing there. I was like, I know he's going to dance on the stairs later because I've seen the memes and I've seen the trailer. But like, what? Why is he doing it now? I don't know. Yeah. That was one of those parts. I was like, eh. I couldn't write that out in my headcanon as not being great.
Mm. The other thing that really worked for me was the tension of the third act. And I don't know how much of it was what the movie did, but also the fact that part of me, just based on the controversy around this movie, made me feel unsafe to go see this movie, even though in the back of my brain, I was like, nothing's going to happen.
Yeah.
But every time, like, I couldn't help glancing around the theater and feeling unsafe in the theater while I was watching the third act, being like, what if someone is going to be inspired by this and do something crazy?
Yeah.
Just because people keep suggesting that that's going to happen. So I felt uneasy in that sense.
It's very interesting that that's the controversy, because that's been going on even before like the movie was seen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, I wonder, I bet you it was like an intern's job just to whisper in someone's ear and that just took off from there. Like it just seems like a guerrilla marketing strategy to get more eyes on this movie. Because this movie would have been great if it wasn't Joker alone.
Mm-hmm.
If it was just like Arthur Fleck was a random guy. But because it is the Joker, that got more butts in seats.
Oh, 100%.
It feels very Cloverfield paradoxy.
Yep.
To me.
I agree.
But yeah, I never felt unsafe in the theater. But like I know, like I generally don't feel unsafe, which is probably pretty stupid of me. Like I'm just gonna like, I'm here. This is fine. We're all fine here.
I think my brain was just escaping on me because I never have that feeling. I never really think about it. Like even after Aurora happened for Dark Knight Rises. Like, I went to it without thinking anything, but
yeah.
I don't know, it was just one of those off days where, like, my brain was going too much in its own world.
Yeah. Well, that's fair, too. The movie is unsettling, too.
It is.
Right? It's not, like, overly so. Like, I think they definitely, for marketing purposes, I think, overestimated it, but there are definitely parts where you're like, hey, geez, like, I can see this kind of happening in real life.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think that adds, like, there's something between, like, spooky and just genuinely scary.
Yeah.
Right. And I think genuinely scary gets to you and makes you look at the world a different way. And I think this movie for a lot of people had that effect.
True.
Yeah.
Which is why the violence feels, even though it's less than most superhero movies,
yeah,
it feels more real and therefore more dangerous. So I understand that, but I don't understand why this movie was particularly attacked.
The body count for the Joker in this movie is shockingly low. In terms of how many people he kills. Mm-hmm. Joker, like, I feel like Jack Nicholson killed, like, dozens and dozens and dozens of people.
Absolutely.
And, like, especially Heath Ledger as well. But, like, Arthur killed, what, 5 people?
Something around that.
He killed the 3 rich kids in the beginning, killed his mother.
Mm-hmm.
He killed...
The talk show host.
Oh, then 6, I'm thinking. Then he also killed his buddy, the clown.
Oh, right.
So 6. Single digits. That's low for the Joker. I'm saying this very like nonchalantly, but like...
No, you're right.
In the world of the Joker, that's nothing.
Yeah, usually it's mass murder. I expected nobody to walk out of that talk show alive.
Yeah, very Dark Knight Returns-y.
Yep.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of expecting too. Absolutely.
Those are the only things I had as the things that worked for me, though. My list of things that didn't work is a lot longer, but were there any other things that did work for you?
The force... point of view from the Joker, an unreliable narrator, and how they don't beat you with the head over it until they're like, no, you have to pay attention. This is not real.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, the whole movie cannot be real. And that's amazing. So that worked for me really well. Yeah, the direction and Joaquin's acting. Yeah, there's so much I can talk about with the unreliable narrator. We can just go into later. But that worked really well for me. And that should in a Joker movie.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Things that didn't work for me, the biggest one we kind of mentioned already, it's not the Joker.
That doesn't ruin it for me. It's not, and I didn't go into it thinking it's going to be the Joker,
mm-hmm.
Mainly because all like the stuff I read where even Todd Phillips is like, this is not the Joker. It's just like a take on the Joker. And I'm like, okay. So when I'm watching it, I'm like, oh, this is just an Elseworlds tale. That's 100% what this is. This is a one-shot Elseworlds tale.
See, for me, this doesn't even work as an Elseworlds because an Elseworlds still, in an Elseworld, you're mm-hmm. still going to wind up at some point being in a world where Batman's fighting the Joker. That's never going to happen in this.
He will, but not that Joker. That's where I think
that's what I mean. Like this is there's no way based on just even age range alone mm-hmm. that this Joker will ever go one on one with that Batman or the Batman we know. And that also is problematic, or I guess should say makes sense, because this Joker is not capable of going one on one with a Batman. He's just not. Physically. He's not there. Like his background's not there. The chemistry stuff that should be in his background. He's not smart enough. Like he just doesn't have the gravitas to stand one on one against Batman.
Well, that's why, like, for me, this Elseworlds is the main difference is Joker isn't there's more than one Joker. Which is something that the comics have alluded to in the past mm-hmm. many a times, and that's why you have so many different versions. Because when you think about the Joker in comics especially, he changes based on what's popular.
True.
At that time. So when Heath Ledger Joker was popular, they gave him the scars. They incorporated bits of Heath Ledger into the actual Joker. And then that stopped as soon as that fad died down. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to assume at some point they're going to start to incorporate some Arthur Fleck stuff into the comics just because of how crazy it's been.
They probably will. And that kind of ticks me off too, but
yeah, I'm not saying that's going to be for the better. Cause I think the Joker in the comics is just perfect on his own, doesn't mm-hmm. need any of these outside influences. But for me, as soon as I got into that train of thought and I was like, oh, he's not the Joker, he's a Joker.
Mm-hmm.
And then my brain started connecting the dots between the DCEU and this movie and saying like, okay, well, he's not the Joker, but he's the catalyst for which the events that occurred to the Waynes happened.
Yeah.
And then that kind of like makes it a little more personal,
I guess. For Batman.
But then that kind of like negates the whole Red Hood and you know.
Yeah, for me, the Joker is a perfect storm of unique creation.
Yeah,
I even got mad when Marvel was like, "Hey, here's a new Hulk." Be like, it's not just a costume that he's throwing on. There's a unique set of circumstances that made this character into this other character. So Bruce Banner is the Hulk. Like you can't change that. So. For me, Joker is Joker. He's the result of a unique set of circumstances where, like, that's not just going to keep happening. Could you have people inspired by that Joker? Yes.
Yeah.
But they're not the Joker.
Right.
Like, that one Joker is Joker. That's it.
Yeah, I see that. But I don't know. It just doesn't bother me as much with especially since I don't think this is the Joker. And this Joker existing in movie form doesn't have any ripple effect into any other movies.
Yeah.
So it's its own thing. Well, I don't think it will. I really don't think it will. I honestly don't think it will. Mostly because who they chose for Thomas Wayne and who they chose for Alfred.
Because
that was horrible casting.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't buy that for a second.
No.
Bruce was fine because you just get a nondescript little cute kid with blue eyes and dark hair and that's fine. But like everyone else, I was like, that's not. It's like, who's this? I can't believe it's not Sean Bean. Like, come on, get out of here, Thomas Wayne. But yeah, like. I think a lot of that, I was like, all right, this is Zone World, Zone Ripple Effect. DC has pretty much given up on their extended universe at this point, although they're kind of not, but they kind of are.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, it's fine. It's just a one shot. And I liked it. I enjoyed it for what it was. And sure, it wasn't the Joker, but they got some aspects of his personality, right?
Some. I think a lot of issues of the movie could have been fixed had this not been a Joker movie.
Yeah.
I would have enjoyed this movie more. And that happens a lot for me, unfortunately, mm-hmm. where... Like you said, it's very Cloverfield paradox in the sense that they could have made this movie about the study of this character, Arthur Fleck, and not having it be Joker and having it be something else that he becomes. But they have to tack that IP on it to get butts in seats because that other movie probably wouldn't work as well or wouldn't be as appealing to the masses. And that's why I feel like bamboozled, because I don't feel like I watched a Joker movie. I watched a movie called Joker with somebody that puts on clown makeup, but it really wasn't Joker.
I guess I was feeling that way until the very last scene. So like the whole end, I don't know if you want to jump into the end.
We can. That's where my biggest stuff comes up.
Okay. So for me, I really liked how it ends and how he's in custody. He's in Arkham, and they send a shrink his way, and that lady is out of her depth. And the whole fact that he's sitting there, he's just laughing to himself, lighting up a cigarette, and she's like, "What's funny?" He goes, "You wouldn't get it." And then the next scene after that is his doing his little Joker dance up a hallway with bloody footsteps following him. That's super Joker-esque for me. He just murdered someone with his bare hands in cold blood and thinks it's hysterical and it's great and it's the best thing he'd ever do. And then he did that silly, like, Scooby-Doo run almost.
He leaves
one side and then he runs off the other side. So, like, for me, that's, like, the end of the transformation. And if there were to be another movie, I would anticipate him to be a lot more animated and a lot more, like, homicidal but, like, goofy at the same time.
Yeah.
For me, that all tied it in because I was like, that is the essence of the Joker right there for me. Murder someone, walk down the hall with the dance, and not even worry about the trail that you're leaving behind you.
See, for me, that was all like just him kind of reenacting the Charlie Chaplin stuff that we saw earlier, or at least that tone, which I get is still kind of a comedic thing. But like, that whole ending scene doesn't work for me.
Really? I loved that scene.
It doesn't. I know it's what most people like, and it's what I wanted in theory, of the sense that you're sitting in a room with a guy who's, like I said originally before going into this movie, I was like, if they do something like they did in The Killing Joke, and he's basically like, this is one possible origin story, then I would accept it a lot more if they're like, this is the origin story. And that scene suggests that a little bit, but I thought it was just such a badly done scene.
Let me ask you this then. What if in 2 years they come out with a movie that's also called Joker? That is just completely different. No Joaquin Phoenix, no anything. It's just another take. Just another possible origin.
Then I would look at it the same way that I did going into this one.
Really?
Like, I would think that, okay, so it's another one. There's no connection. One movie coming out from another director.
No. I mean, same director, same everything. It's a series.
Oh.
But they call it the same thing.
Oh, I don't want another Joker movie from Phillips.
See, I would love this one. Because then that would be, or maybe even have Joaquin Phoenix, but have it be completely different. Different name, different everything, and just an origin again.
My other problem, too, though, is I hate when other movies fix problems with prior movies just because, like, and saying, oh, no, that movie's better now because of this one. Like, they tried doing that with Batman v Superman and Man of Steel, where, like, all the destruction in Man of Steel is now somehow justified. Because it becomes, oh, we meant to do that. And now we're showing you why in Batman v Superman. Be like, no, you did not.
No, yeah. I think for me, it would be that multiple person or multiple origin story kind of thing. Where if we kept on getting the same director, the same actors, but in different roles for the same origin purpose. I think for me, that would be a multiple choice.
It's interesting. It's conceptually interesting, but I'm not into it.
Maybe it should have been like a mini series.
Maybe.
Or like an anthology series.
I like that. If it was presented as such from the beginning and it was like a mini series that they were doing on like a streaming service or whatever, I could get into that idea more, but I also don't want to watch like 4 or 5 different Joker origins. Like,
fair. That's fair. It's a lot of Joker.
Yeah.
A lot of Joker.
Yeah. And they also in the final scene. So there's a quote from Phillips about it and about actually there's a few. Here's my other problem with the movie.
Oh, geez.
Is that Phillips' take on the movie is so bad. Like his perspectives on making this and the character and everything all feel way off to me. So it just convinces me that he doesn't even get Joker, like the comic character at all. So for one thing, like even talking about this, whether it's the Joker or not, he said, quote, "We didn't follow anything from the comic books, which people are going to be mad about. We just wrote our own version of where a guy like Joker might come from. That's what was interesting to me. We're not even doing Joker, but the story of becoming Joker. It's about this man." He says what I'm saying. He says this is not Joker. This is just a story about a guy who goes down a similar path to becoming a character that's kind of like the Joker, but not really.
And that brings it back to the original point is like, besides butts and seats, like this could have been any villain, really, if you think about it.
It could have. And if you're going to do that, like that's... Bringing in, when they brought in the Thomas Wayne stuff and the Bruce Wayne stuff and all that, it made me madder because...
It did at first for me too, yeah.
Because when you're saying this and then you're tying it into the Batman universe, well, now you're saying it is Joker. So make a decision here. You can't have it both ways.
Yeah, it's like, shit or get off the pot. Come on.
Yeah, I don't like that.
Is this Gotham City or is this Chicago?
Mm-hmm.
Which one? Get to pick one. Let's go. Yeah. I like when the Wayne started showing up, and that's like, it's one thing to have them on the TV, and that's fine because that's just a part of Gotham City. Mm-hmm. But when they actually started incorporating aspects, when they were like, Thomas Wayne is your father, Arthur Fleck, I was just like, no.
Same.
Get out of here with that.
Like, I was done with the movie at that point. I know they rolled it back wisely.
Yeah.
But even still, I was like, it's already too much.
Yeah. And that, like, for me, that's where it started to get on my nerves with, I can accept this being one shot, this being Elseworlds, this being an alternate tale of the Joker, but I cannot accept for the life of me Bruce Wayne and the Joker being brothers by blood.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't wrap my head around that.
No, it's awful.
They would literally be different sides of the same coin, and not just like it almost like intertwines them in like genetics. And I didn't like it. And I did like how you said they dialed it back and they're just like, oh, your mom's crazy. But then they said, oh, maybe she's not really crazy, but then maybe she is really crazy. And that's where a lot of that unreliable narration mm-hmm. really worked for me.
Except she is crazy.
Except she's, yeah, she's
if crazy. If you know anything about Thomas Wayne.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they're showing us a Thomas Wayne from Arthur Fleck's perspective, because again, unreliable narrator.
Yeah.
But I was watching everything Thomas Wayne was doing. I was like, that's not Thomas Wayne. Like, we know that character.
Right.
That's not Thomas Wayne. What are you doing?
Right. And even though like Thomas Wayne had some like shady dealings with like the Court of Owls and stuff like that, mm-hmm. he would never like punch an unarmed, mentally unstable man in the bathroom.
Right.
In anger, he just wouldn't do that. And that's where it really started to like, I got out of the movie, I really started thinking about it. I was like, what really was real? And I think that was just through Arthur's perspective.
And I feel like a former employee of Thomas Wayne who was mentally ill would be financially taken care of.
Oh, absolutely. 100%.
Like, she would not even be in the situation where she's out of the hospital with an adopted son and all that stuff. She would be taken care of.
Yeah. Yeah. I think too that, like, because she got that attachment to Thomas Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, and there's no, this is me speculating at this point, but I like to think this is kind of what happened, where maybe she was assaulted by an employee that worked on the grounds or worked with her or something.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it be sexual assault or not, and maybe that resulted in Arthur, and they just said he was adopted because that would help her.
Mm.
And that's why you have, like, maybe the forged paperwork.
Maybe. I don't know. Even though there's an unreliable narrator, I like to take things as presented, because a lot of those things were presented by people that were not Arthur.
But we're still looking at it through Arthur's point of view.
True, but like, why would Arthur want to see adoption papers? He didn't want that to be true.
It helps villainize Thomas even more.
It does, but it also undercuts what his want is.
I think it's a matter of what his want is as well at that point.
Yeah. Well, which was another problem of the movie. But what did you think? Because I had issues with it.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think about their interpretation of the laugh?
Yeah, it didn't do anything for me.
Of it being like a Tourette's.
I think that was just a way for them to get him to laugh at inappropriate moments and mm-hmm. have him kind of get away with it without actually having to do any homework, I guess, for the Joker.
It felt like a plot device.
Yeah, it was fine. Like, it just reinforced the whole clown thing for me. And I could have done without it, to be honest, because I think there's something. They tried to make him more of a victim with that laugh and that
mm-hmm.
effect. And now that I'm actually thinking about it a little bit more, too, because it's not something I gave a second thought to. I was like, cool, that's, he just has that. It does also enforce the trauma that happened to him as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And also, they're telling you the whole time, every time he laughs, that he's not reliable. He's got serious brain injury.
Yeah.
We should not be trusting him. So it was fine. The physical laugh itself, though, I didn't like.
Oh, yeah. It was
like his Joker laugh.
Well, it was supposed to make you uncomfortable, and it's not
even uncomfortable. I don't know. I think it just Mark Hamill spoiled us. I think that's what it, like, that's the perfect Joker laugh.
It was odd that his face never lined up with the laugh.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't laughing out of humor. He was laughing out of pain. Yeah.
Yeah. The face he made, it was actually very reminiscent of when people get doused with Joker gas.
Mm-hmm. Apparently, there is only one authentic laugh in the entire movie, according to Phillips.
Really? Which one?
In that final scene. That same one where he's in Arkham, He said, quote, that laugh in that scene is really the only time he laughs genuinely. Mm. There's the laugh from Arthur's affliction, and then there's his fake laugh when he's trying to be one of the people. Sometimes he does that laugh where he's like looking around and he's like, ha ha ha.
Oh yeah, when he was taking notes at stand up.
Yep.
And he would laugh when no one else was laughing.
Exactly.
I did like that too, though.
But at the end, when he's in the room at Arkham State Hospital, that's his only genuine laugh in the movie.
See, that works for me, knowing that a little bit more.
That works, but all the other times not being genuine doesn't work for me. Because, right. Again, if we're talking about core things about a character, mm-hmm. Joker finds death and chaos funny. Right. So if you're doing this like Tourette's thing and said you're taking away that big core of the character because now the laugh means nothing. Mm-hmm. Even in the third act, which was, like we said, or at least in my opinion, the best part of the movie, Joker would find what he does to the talk show host hilarious.
Yeah.
But the only emotion we see in that scene is anger. And that's, again, not Joker.
So I don't think he's Joker at that point, though, even though he's using that moniker. I think he's actually turns to the Joker in that last scene. Or maybe not that last scene, but during the riots.
Oh.
So here's the how I envision the riots as well. Because, again, we're looking at it through his point of view. Mm-hmm. We see everyone worshiping him and cheering him on and doing all that stuff. And he does his little goofy Joker dance on the hood of a cop car, I think it was.
Yeah, yeah.
For me, that's not what really happened. I wish they had the shot. And, like, you know, if I could just, like, if I could pay, like, Todd Phillips $200 and just, like, redo this one shot, I would 100% do this right now. Where we get a glimpse of that versus what's really going on, which is a legitimate riot that he knows he caused. Mm-hmm. And the people rioting is his interpretation of how they can worship him or applaud him. And that was super Joker-esque for me. There's a whole riot going on in the city and he's just like dancing and posing. And even though he's not in the right mental state, he thinks that they're applauding him and all that. He's turning into the Joker at that point. And then partnering that now with the fact that, and this is just headcanon for me again, mm-hmm. with the fact that the first actual laugh he does in the movie is right before he kills the psychiatrist. He's not the Joker. He has control over the laugh.
Yeah.
Even though it doesn't work mentally because, you know, he actually has physical brain damage.
Right.
And that's a condition that he's never going to be able to get rid of, no matter how confident you get.
Yeah, it's weird because, yeah, they set up too many things that conflict mm-hmm. with the version that they want us to accept at the end.
Yep, I agree. But I like that end version a lot. Like the confidence, the pose that he has. Like I could easily see getting Arthur Fleck, throw him in some acid, and now he's the Joker.
Mm-hmm.
And then magically, through the miracle of movies, he now doesn't have that syndrome anymore.
A thing that felt unnecessary for me, I respect it, and it worked in like one scene, but the need to have him lose like 50-something pounds and be super skinny and frail, mm-hmm. I don't think is necessary for this character, and I only feel it was done as a nod to Taxi Driver.
See, if this movie wasn't a Joker movie, I would agree with you. But the Joker for me has always been super scrawny and skinny.
But it's not a Joker movie.
But it is a Joker movie.
But it's also
But it is, but it's not. I'm going to need a coin to flip on this one. Because even though it's not a Joker movie, even by Todd Phillips' own admission, mm-hmm. the title of the movie is still Joker.
It is.
So you couldn't have, like, I don't know, Andy Richter in this role.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You have to have someone that at least closely resembles the physical shape of the character.
Well, I mean, skinny, sure.
Yeah.
Lanky, sure. Yeah. Malnourished and like frail, a little too much for me.
Yeah, it didn't bother. It worked for me. That weird hunching over that he did over his shoe was kind of off, and I think that was just there to like make me feel slightly disturbed, which didn't really work.
I think that's what it was for entirely, was just to make us feel more uncomfortable, because it's harder to watch somebody who looks like they could be snapped at any moment.
Yeah, that's true too. I don't know. His body and like the lack of weight worked for me, especially given his financial situation in the movie.
Yeah. The only time it worked for me from like just a pure visual standpoint is after he kills his clown buddy and he's like in his doorway with his face just white and he like bends over. He looks like a marionette a bit.
Yeah, that was really cool. Yeah.
That's the one time I was like, oh, that looks cool. But every other time I was just like, I feel like this is just trying to make me feel uncomfortable.
He would have made a great ragdoll.
Yeah. That's what he kind of looked like in that scene.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay. We haven't talked about this at all. And I think the fact that we haven't shows how unnecessary it was.
All right.
The whole relationship with Zazie Beetz' character.
Yeah. It didn't need to be there.
No.
It, like, she actually distracted me from the movie a lot because that whole movie, I was just like, where do I know you from?
Oh.
And I couldn't, like, and I'm not going to pull up my IMDb, like, right then and there.
Yeah.
And she's only been in two things that I've seen.
Deadpool
2
yeah.
and Atlanta. So I was just kind of like, the whole movie, I was like, God damn, where do I, and then, like, I think it was towards the end, I was like, oh, Deadpool. That's right. And that's really funny, too, also, because you have the clerk at Arkham is also in Atlanta.
Oh, yeah.
And he also voiced Miles Morales' dad in Spider-Verse.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, but anyways, yeah, like, it didn't really do too much for me, except cement the fact that Arthur's off his rocker.
Yeah.
That's all that really did, because he has this whole, like, imaginary relationship with her, and when it started happening, I was like, this feels off.
Well, yeah, that's the problem with it. Like, they tried doing this whole kind of Fight Club-esque twist where, like, they say, okay, this relationship was only happening in his head. This woman exists, but he's imagining this entire relationship with her.
Mm.
The problem with it being that it was never believable to begin with.
Right.
Like, I didn't buy the relationship at any point. There was, they have this, like, level of intimacy really quickly.
Yeah.
Where you were just like, wait, what happened? Who are you again? And when they did the twist, I was like, yeah, okay. I didn't buy it either. like, why are you even wasting time with this?
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. It was, they tried to, like, allude that this is a possibility when we first see him watching Murray on TV, but it just didn't, the payoff wasn't there.
No.
Like, as I'm watching it, I'm like, is she crazy too? Is she just going to be like a weird, like, Harley Quinn version? I was like, no, they're not going to, like, confuse people with that.
Yeah.
Because Margot Robbie is already killing it over there. So what's the point? Where is this going?
If anything, it was supposed to be our, like, bonk bonk on the head of, hey, don't believe everything that this movie's showing you.
Yeah, but it was just too distracting to even, like, think about that. I wonder if he killed her.
Yeah, they don't show that. Here's the other weird thing that I just thought about. So if the entire movie is from Arthur's perspective, and he's an unreliable narrator, how do we know that the relationship, like, how can they show it to us that it is fake? How does he know that it's fake?
That's true.
So, like, these are the, like, weird inconsistencies that make me go, this movie doesn't even know what it wants to do.
I think we don't realize it's fake until the scene where he's in her apartment and she goes, I think you're in the wrong apartment. And then it shows us everything, right?
Right.
Or maybe a few lines are said after that. But I think that's him realizing that. That's why I said, I wonder if he killed her. That's him snapping back to reality, being like, oh, maybe she wasn't actually there, and remembering two things at once.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think he just killed her and moved on.
Maybe. See, I didn't think he killed her. I think he just kind of left.
But, like, that's so un-Arthur-like at that point. Because basically anything that's made him feel inferior or made him feel uncomfortable, he's killed or at least tried to address.
Yeah.
I'm going to say he's killed. Because his friend gave him the gun and then sold him out.
Yep.
Killed that clown. He tried to get Thomas Wayne, but Thomas Wayne is just too big, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
His mother, the psychiatrist at the end, like, the three kids on the subway, three guys.
She also has a daughter though, right?
Yes. And that's also makes my stomach turn a little bit thinking.
And I feel like that was what was pushing me to thinking that he didn't actually kill her, because I feel like in that moment he was distraught over his mother and that whole, like, parent child thing was going on in his brain. And that's why I feel like when he realized it and he saw reality, he just got up and walked out because he couldn't handle it. And he was considering in the back of his brain that this is a mother as well. And his mother's dying.
Yes, but did he? I don't remember if he learned if he was adopted at that point. Or I think he did. That's why he was having a bad day.
Maybe. Maybe not. I don't remember.
I will watch this again at some point. I'm not rushing to go see it again.
Yep.
But, you know, if it's on, you know, Netflix or whatever, or some streaming service, I'll give it another go. But if at that point, if I remember, if he learned that she adopted him, all bets are off.
True.
Because it's kind of like, if I can't have a mother, why can you?
Yeah. I mean, I guess that whole part's just up to pure interpretation, because there's no hint one way or the other.
Right. She just leaves and that's it. And
it's
a real Schrodinger's Zazzy at that point. Real Schrodinger's Beats at that point.
In a movie already about ambiguity, they just threw another ambiguous moment. Like, right,
it does
in it.
Really use that as a crutch now that I'm thinking about it, at least in my mind.
The ambiguity?
Yeah.
It does, absolutely.
I like it a lot, but it is, like, really leaning on it very heavily.
it will tie into my biggest issue with the movie, which we'll get into for sure. So they do this whole thing with him being mentally ill, which I know they're trying to make us sympathize or empathize with Arthur, but Joker doesn't have a mental illness. He's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
So it felt kind of gross to me that like they were blaming it all on mental illness. And then the part where he really snaps, and you can say for me, the transformation occurred when he killed his best friend, his not his best friend, but the clown guy.
Yeah.
That was like when he was going full Joker from that point on. And then his rationale for that was like, oh, yeah, I'm off my meds now. So like, apparently going off your meds means you become the Joker. Like that, I know that's not exactly what they're implying,
right?
But it felt kind of gross to me that like we have so many mental health discussions going on in society right now, that it felt very
irresponsible
odd and weird and irresponsible to be like, yeah, I'm going off my meds and now I'm like bananas.
Yeah, I agree with that. But for me, again, my mindset I think is different from yours, where this is not the Joker for me. So
it's not for me either.
They can, well, like, and I'm,
but the problem of it being like they want it both ways, and I'm torn between like, I don't know how I'm supposed to be evaluating this movie.
That's fair for me. Yeah. It's like, it's not the joke. It's an indie movie that just wants more money, I think is what it is.
That, yeah, it kind of is. But in that case, like leave out the stuff that says we're not an indie movie that just wants more money.
Yeah, no, I agree with. The whole Joker is just crazy. He's just off his rocker. There's no amount of medication other than sedation.
Yeah.
And even that doesn't always work all the time. Or even like, what was it in Dark Knight Returns where he was just comatose until Batman came back? Like, that's literally it. And I wonder what they were kind of thinking going into it with like going, we're not going to have any base knowledge of the Joker. We're just going to have a character that's kind of Joker-ish, because that's what they did for X-Men Origin Wolverine. And that did not turn out well.
No.
At all.
I think a lot of the ambiguity, and this, like I said, this kind of ties into what I'll present as my biggest problem with the
movie.
I'm
so excited for this.
The ambiguity is unfortunately making a lot of people think that this movie is more intelligent than it is.
100%.
Because it's leaving a lot of space for people to headcanon, for people to interpret it how they want. And yes, you can say that that's art and people interpret art however they want. If you don't tell someone what a song means, are you being ambiguous or are you letting them interpret it from themselves? I don't know this movie's point of view. And that is my biggest problem with it, is ultimately this movie has nothing to say. They bring up a lot of really interesting things. They talk about income equality, and we see like the classes in Gotham City and how they're affected. And that becomes a thing for a while. And then it drops off.
Yeah.
We get a lot of this descent into madness and exploration of mental illness. And they bring it up and it drops off. And then we see this whole interesting story that kind of goes throughout everything as well about his obsession with this talk show host and that celebrity obsession, which we see a little bit in the final scene of him like having everyone applaud for him. But they don't really give us any commentary on celebrity obsession either. That also drops off. Yeah. So they bring up all these really interesting things that don't go anywhere or tell us anything. The movie has no point of view.
I agree and disagree at the same time on that one. I agree with everything. Like, they don't really fully pan out a lot of that. For me, the fact that everyone was willing to rally around the Joker as a figurehead, so to speak, and they know absolutely nothing about this guy. They don't even know what he really looks like, anything like that. It was literally just the fuse that this whole class war needed to really take place, essentially. I think that was the point of the movie, was like, people, if you get people desperate enough, they'll rally behind anything, even if it's someone who's just psychotic.
Maybe. But at the same time, like, there's no hero here. Even from Arthur's point of view, there's no hero here, because at no point do we really feel like we start feeling sympathy for him, and that goes away very quickly.
Well, yeah, it's because Batman's only 9 years old.
Yeah.
He hasn't become Batman yet. Yeah, no, I agree. There's no real, actually the true hero is the clerk in Arkham, who is only doing his job. there's a city full of antagonists.
Yeah.
Is what it seemed like. And even like Alfred couldn't be heroic when he was trying to get Bruce. Like Alfred seemed very like snivelly and whiny, and Thomas was just kind of a dick, and Bruce was just a small child because he was actually a small child at that point in his life. Hey, they got Bruce Wayne pretty right for that time period.
They did, yeah. And don't get me wrong, I like a character study. I understand that they really are doing a character study, but when they're not actually saying anything about that character, it becomes pretty disinteresting. And oddly enough, the more that we learn about Arthur's Joker, the less interesting he is to me compared to the actual Joker.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So this movie did nothing for the character of Joker, in my opinion.
For the Joker mythos or anything like that. Yeah, I agree. It didn't even, like, if you wanted to like take a look behind the scenes as well, when Heath Ledger, unfortunately, when he passed, there's a whole bunch of Joker mythos that really popped up at that time period where it was just like, oh, the Joker is more of an entity that just possesses you when you like when you are acting as the Joker. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people kind of attributed Heath's reliance on sleeping pills, and that's how he died. He overdosed on the fact that he just couldn't sleep because he couldn't get the Joker out of his head.
Right.
In actuality, Heath Ledger suffered from insomnia. So he just needed that anyways. And he just.
Yeah. And people in his life have since said, no, he was not like method acting and wrapped up in this character or anything like that.
And Jack Nicholson didn't help matters either when he, I think it was someone asked him, he was walking through his day, and I think it was the paparazzi or someone got him, or TMZ got him going, then like, what do you have to say about Heath? And all he said was, I told him, I told him. It's like, you're not helping matters here, Jack.
Yeah.
Stop it. But, yeah, like it didn't even, they could have easily done that too. It's just built up that mythos, because Jared Leto tried to build up that mythos too behind the scenes, and he failed by like, what, sending dead rats to his co-stars
like
and stuff.
Like a pig head.
Yeah, pig heads. Yeah. Oh my God, he's terrible.
But those are my big issues. Are there any lingering that we haven't talked about for you?
Not really. I mean, my biggest issues were some of your issues, but like a lot, some of that I could sweep under the rug. I think it's the casting though too. Thomas Wayne's casting was not great.
Yeah.
Because we saw him in commercials and stuff, and I was like, who is that supposed to be? And they're like, oh, Thomas Wayne. And I was like, no, stop this immediately.
Yeah.
I have mixed feelings on how their death is entwined in these riots and how it was done with a person in a clown mask. That kind of gives me mixed feelings. I mean, it doesn't take away anything because it's still an unnamed assaultant.
Right.
But
I would have preferred they took the clown mask off and like been in the shadows so Bruce or the parents didn't see the clown mask.
Yeah.
Because that is a problem for just things moving forward.
Yeah. Because then he won't be Batman anymore. He'll be Clown Man.
Right.
Because clown holes will be his greatest fear. And then where will we be? Nowhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like I said, the main casting, Alfred is not great. Thomas was not great, although Arthur was great. I mean, Joaquin is great.
The only reason that I even understood that character was Arthur is because of the way that they were like just in proximity to Bruce.
Oh, yeah.
There's nothing about that person or the way they acted that suggested Arthur to
Alfred.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Like, and that might not even be Alfred for all we know.
It might not. I think it was heavily suggested.
Yeah, I think it was too, with his accent and him being so close and so protective of Bruce.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although he was just like a teddy bear, Alfred. Like he was, I don't know. That's not what I like. I don't know.
I didn't buy it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of my problems with this are not Joker related. It's more Wayne and family related. And yeah, everything else I could just write off. And again, I'm not like super attached to the Joker either. Like I like him as a character and I have my reference, and I think that ultimately everything in this movie for me doesn't affect any of the other Jokers.
No, like it doesn't shade or twist or change anything on any of the previous interpretations.
Yeah.
I guess my biggest problem when somebody does a movie like this is that this becomes like a big mainstream thing. This will be the first that some people see of the character Joker.
Oh, I haven't considered that.
That's the problem for me, is because now I'm going to have a lot of people that I have to explain to, like,
yeah,
this wasn't, no, like, the Joker was not Arthur Fleck. No, you don't understand.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I didn't think, I thought, oh, man, I'm going to have so many conversations now.
Within our circles, it's fine.
Yeah, yeah,
but,
yeah,
like, as soon as you talk to the mainstream, and especially when this movie did as well as it did, and people hail it as a masterpiece and everything,
yeah,
then you get all the people who are like, oh, wow, that was the Joker's origin story. I never knew how he got to be the Joker. Meanwhile, the director's like, no, we didn't look at the comics. We have no understanding of the character. We just did this movie, and then we made a guy wear Joker face paint.
Yeah. And it's not even great Joker face paint either. It's just clown. It was very Heath Ledger-esque in that, like, when, especially when he's all sweaty and melty and stuff like that, and unkempt. Yeah, I hadn't considered that. For me, whenever I watch a comic book movie, my main concern is, how is this going to affect other things that I really like? And if it doesn't at all and it's radically different, I don't mind it as much. And I think I'm getting more forgiving because we're getting so many superhero and comic book materials that are being adapted into live action, that before, like when X-Men 3 came out, we weren't getting that many. And that was like devastating because I was like, I was looking forward to this. I'm not going to get another good or another, I shouldn't say good, but like high budget superhero movie for at least another 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're getting 3 a year, 4 a year. So for me, I think the stakes are lower.
True.
And so I'm more forgiving and I don't have to wait a half a decade to get another one. But at the same time, I see what you're saying. And I had never considered that I'm going to get someone at work going, oh, Arthur Fleck. So that's really the Joker's name. And I'm just going to be like,
exactly. That's my biggest problem with movies that present certain things that are so contrary to what we know to be true. Mm-hmm. And then people accept that as fact because they've never picked up a comic book before or watched a cartoon or things like that. But it also concerns me that what's going to happen with DC movies or comic book movies in general moving forward, because we've often seen that pattern of Hollywood just latching onto the thing that became popular and is going to make the money and then trying to repeat that in different forms. So there are things that I do want to see repeated here, because I've read some reports that Joker is the most, hasn't made the most money out of any comic book movie, but it is the most profitable considering how much spent on the movie versus what they've made on. This was like a $50 million movie or something.
Oh, wow.
Like it's not a high budget whatsoever. And it made a buttload of money.
Oh, sure.
So the profit margin is the most of any comic book movie ever.
That's not something else I thought of either. I think it's just DC trying to copy Marvel again.
This?
Think about Logan and think about Deadpool and how low budget they were, but how focused they were on one character.
And that's what I don't mind. I want more of that.
Right, right. But I think this was DC's attempt at doing that.
Maybe.
Just like the DCEU is their attempt at replicating the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
So this could be a one-time success in that formula for them. But what I'm hoping it becomes is like we said at the beginning, I want to see a street-level, low-budget, gritty Batman movie, but I want to see one that's authentic to the comics.
Yeah.
The biggest problem I have with a lot of Batman movies is that they all end up having this like epic scale third act. And it's like, you don't need to do that. It's a Batman movie. Do you not understand? Just because it's a movie doesn't mean you have to do something that you wouldn't be able to pull off on TV.
Right.
It means that you just have a different format to tell a story about this character. But like, if you keep the budget down and you just focus on a detective story, we can get a kick ass Batman movie and you can make a ton of money.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think the movie studios don't realize, and this is going to, the fact that the Joker made is as profitable as it is going to deter this fact. They don't realize that when we go to see a superhero movie or a comic book movie or a movie that's adapted from some sort of graphic novel that we really like, we want it to stay as close to the source material as it can, because for us, it's just it's a different medium in which to tell a story. And I think that's why Watchmen was so well received. They changed like three things, if that, and that was about it, the ending being the main one.
Yeah,
that's why Sin City was so well received. That's why 300 was so well received. That's why Deadpool, while it's not really adapted from a particular storyline,
it is very true to the core of the character.
It's the character
and the tone
absolutely. And the same thing with Logan. Logan and Old Man Logan are drastically different stories, but the character is there. And also, Hugh Jackman slays it as Wolverine every time.
And it's an earned movie.
It's an earned movie, yeah. That's what we want. We want to have the homework for the big payoff. And again, that's why Endgame was so good. We watched how many? Over a decade of movies?
Yeah.
Just for that one? And man, did that work well. we're not afraid to spend the money. We're literally not afraid to give you money to do this correct.
Yes.
So why won't you do it correctly?
And you can pull it off, and we're still going to give you the money regardless of how much money you spend to get that thing done.
You will get more money. I'll tell you right now, movie studios listening, I will tell you this right now. You will get more money out of me if you do it correctly. Guaranteed.
Guaranteed.
I've seen 90% of the Marvel movies that have come out more than once in theaters.
Same.
Do you know how many times I've seen the DC movies in theaters?
Once. Most. Since Nolan.
Yes.
Those I saw like 4 or 5 times.
Yes. Yeah, since the whole DCEU stuff started, I've only seen each of those movies once in theaters. Shazam was real close to getting me going again. Real close.
I saw Wonder Woman 3 times.
I think Wonder Woman was once. Yeah, that was definitely once.
All the others were one for me.
Yeah. I'm telling you, you will get double, triple admission price from me in probably opening weekend.
Yep.
Like, there are some points where, like, in Endgame, I just turned around and went back in line.
Basically, yeah.
Like, come on. It's a no-brainer. This is how you do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There are a bunch of theories, obviously, about the movie. I'm not going to go into all of them, but one of them is one we talked about already. Just wanted to throw the quote in there from Phillips that said, quote, maybe Joaquin's character inspired the Joker. You don't really know.
See, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
That's 100% what I'm thinking.
But also just doesn't make sense for the Joker we know. But that's fine.
Yeah.
The final scene we talked about. And then this is another weird contradiction. Philip said about Easter eggs that, quote, I don't do Easter eggs. Any Easter eggs anybody finds is a mistake. I don't understand. That's what he said. He said there's no Easter eggs in this movie. As far as like, so there's a clock thing that people have noticed in three different scenes in the movie. The clock reads 11:11.
Okay.
And they're all at like very pivotal scenes.
Yeah.
And people have been like, oh, that means this. Or this. And Phillips is like, no, it's coincidence, or the art department just felt like doing 11:11 for all of them. Like, there's nothing. There's nothing there from my end.
What is 11? Does that look like a smile? What does that look like on 11? Oh, wait. No, it's not. Never mind.
No.
I was thinking that'd be cool. What time am I thinking of that would look cool on it?
That would be fun, though.
That would be a really cool one.
Yeah.
That's so. Why would you not?
And yet, he also confirmed an Easter egg, which is that he probably doesn't think of it as an Easter egg because he referred to it as a nod.
Yeah.
And I thought of it right when it happened in the movie when Bruce slides down that pole in his backyard.
Yeah, that was totally an Easter egg.
He confirmed that as a nod to Batman 66.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
100%. God damn you. Make up your mind, Todd.
Exactly.
Wilson. You make such a pretty movie, but god damn, make up your mind. I'm wondering if, like, he just let someone, like an intern, direct a couple of scenes and that was one of them.
Watch, I'm going to sneak this in. He'll never know.
Like the editing floor.
Yeah.
They'll be none the wiser.
I don't know, but that's Joker for me. I don't know if there's anything else you want to say about it.
No, I think that just, like, it's not as groundbreaking of a movie as everyone is, as the press is saying it is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the big thing is like, oh, this is going to cause riots and blah, 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 blah. And, like, it's not. It's a great indie movie, and it definitely takes some hints from Scorsese and Taxi Driver.
Some. Taxi Driver, King of Comedy, like, huge references.
It's like a love letter to those movies, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's good. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to go see it again in theaters. I'm glad I saw it when I saw it. I didn't cheap out and go to like my local shithole cheapo was it Half Price Tuesdays? I didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
But if I had done that, I probably would have been fine too. Like, it is what it is. I'm going to, like I said, wait for a streaming and come back and maybe watch it while I'm taking a nap or something.
You're gonna have some weird dreams, man.
No, you know, I listen to weird stuff too when I fall asleep. I listen to like ghost stories and stuff, and not just in October, but like I love all that stuff. So it doesn't bother me none. It's just a very, maybe I'll put on mute. That might be better. It's visually interesting the whole time around. It's fine. It's good. I recommend, if people are even interested, go see it once, see what you think. If you're not sure, then do a Cheapo Tuesdays or do a matinee or whatever.
It's fine.
Yeah.
I went in with low expectations.
Yeah.
I watched a movie that looked visually interesting and had an amazing performance by one actor, but ultimately still managed to disappoint me, even with my low expectations.
I feel like it's an alley-oop for Joaquin Phoenix. I feel like Todd Phillips is like, hey, you want an Oscar, bud?
Yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah. If you go into this movie, if you're not a fan of Joker, you'll probably love this movie.
Mm-hmm.
If you are a fan and are very much tied to the character and the things that kind of make that character what it is. You might be more in my camp of not loving it because of too many liberties it takes. But if you can watch it, just call it clown in the back of your brain.
Yeah.
And that's really what this movie is. Just a guy that kind of goes into madness. And if it wasn't Joker, it'd be so much better in my opinion. But it's fine. It's fine. I probably won't watch it again. I don't hate it. That's the other thing too, though. Like I sound like I'm really down on it. I didn't hate the movie. I just literally got nothing from it. It happened. I was worth seeing for Joaquin's performance. But aside from that, I really can't be like, go rush out and see it. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not telling anyone to go out and see it right now. I think for me, especially with DC stuff, it can't get any worse than Jesse Eisenberg, Lex Luthor.
I agree.
And this was no exception. Like, this is fine. This was nowhere near the level of crap that was, because while it gets a lot of the character wrong, it still gets some of it right. Whereas Lex Luthor, it's just Jesse Eisenberg is 100% wrong.
100%. Yeah.
100%. You can't get further from the character than that.
I agree.
Yeah.
All right. So to wrap things up, final thought or something you would like to plug?
Oh, man, plug. I got so many things to plug. I got too many things to plug right now. All right. So first of all, if you were listening to this show, then you probably already know about the Geek Generation Network. Probably. And if you do, then you probably already know about a small little show that I run called Adapt This, a DC Animated Universe podcast. And yes, I said that all in one breath. It's a great little show that I run where I have a different guest star on every episode. And we go over the DC comic book material and compare it to the animated movie in which it was adapted from. Sometimes we go in super detail, sometimes we don't, but it's always a good time. We also have episodes that go a little bit off format. I know, Rob, you were on one of them where we just break down the character bit by bit and kind of talk about casting and how we would adapt this character into a live action format.
Yeah, that was fun.
So that's one of the things I have to plug. The second thing I have to plug is I'm part of an ensemble podcast crew called the Bad Coyote Funky Podcast. We are a group of anywhere from 3 to 6 nerds, depending on who's available that night. And we talk about the latest and greatest news that comes out, kind of like what you do on the Bay Show of Geek Generation.
Yeah, it's very much in the similar spirit.
And we do it live is one of the big things we do. So we do it live at twitch.tv/BadCodyFunky on Thursday nights at around 9-ish, if case we can get Casey to show up on time, then we're at 9 o'clock. If we're late, it's because Casey was not on time. That's usually what happens. The last thing I want to plug is my own Twitch. I've been gearing back up on that. So you can find me over at twitch.tv/BoosterGreg. So that's all the places that you can find me.
Fantastic. The Geek Generation is part of the Geek Generation Network. If you like this show, be sure to check out our other podcasts at thegeekgeneration.com, including Adapt This.
Yeah.
If you use iTunes, please rate the show and write a review. We may even read your review on an upcoming episode. Watch our live events at twitch.tv/thegeekgeneration. You can support this show and get access to exclusive bonus content by visiting our Patreon campaign at thegeekgeneration.com/support. Continue the conversation with us on our Discord server at thegeekgeneration.com/discord. Send emails to podcast@thegeekgeneration.com. And as always, the show theme is provided by Machine Supremacy. A link to their site can also be found on our site. We'll be back soon with more geeky stuff for you, and we'll see you then. Later.
Make it so.